Kyler's going to be taken down. Aaron Donald in the backfield. Second down and 10. Still two timeouts for the Rams. Little no-look pass is complete. First down and 10. Stafford loads up for the deep shot. Running ahead of everyone is Van Jefferson. Touchdown. 52 yards for the score. And it's tipped and intercepted. Leonard Floyd down the sideline. And he's knocked out of bounds by Murray. Going to his right and throwing that way and snuck it in for Cooper Kupp. Touchdown for the Rams.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 1 of the East Coast Rams. I'm here, your host, Ashton Spencer, with my awesome co-host, Zach Mayer. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm doing pretty good, pretty good.
Yeah, wow, what a win, what a win. We're about to dig into it, go through our four quarters of our podcast, and our first quarter is breaking down the last previous game. And Zach, what a game it was. I mean, I can't say much. You got Stafford for throwing over 300 yards, three touchdowns, a few dimes in there. And our defense just kind of completely constricting the Arizona offense, causing two interceptions. What were your first thoughts on this game?
Well, I mean, going into this game, I mean, it was it seemed like it was a must win, especially if we wanted to actually come out and be division leaders in this. You know, it was a game where, you know, we needed a bounce back. We were down a three game losing streak. Then we came in and, you know, took care of the Jacksonville Jaguars pretty heavy-handedly. But then coming to this game, it was like, this is make or break. You know, we need to show them that, you know, this team is for real. We're Super Bowl contenders, and that we're ready to take on, you know, the big dogs. So, you know, going into this game Saturday and Sunday, you know, getting prepared, and then, you know, finding out the news on, you know, Monday that we were going to lose Ramsey and Higbee, which, you know, I think blew back a lot of Rams fans' hopes.
Yeah, I know definitely for me, whenever I looked into this whole thing, and I was driving home after work, and I, like, park my car, and I look, and I see the news that, like, oh, Ramsey's not going to be playing. I had a good feeling about this game going into it, but that kind of quashed that good feeling. And it got even worse whenever the game starts, and we're going to go through the play-by-play starting out in the first quarter. Zach, the team starts off slow. Arizona ends up getting 3 points, and then we end up going 3 and out, and instantly there, that Zach, I was starting to get a feeling like our other losses. Yep. It was starting to worry me a lot, and the biggest play of the game, at least for me, and you can put out your biggest play of the game whenever it happens, is this interception by our rookie Ernest Jones on a goal line stand, because this is a different game if we go down 10-0. It is. The Rams do not play from behind those big deficits well. They haven't under Sean McVay. I don't think he's ever had a comeback greater of 14 points. If we have had it, it's only been like once. So, like, we don't do comebacks really well. The only one I can remember is the Bills one, and we didn't even win that one. So, yeah,
that was a heartthrob.
Yeah, heartthrob. You know. So, like, really, Ernest Jones picking off this ball was very critical for the momentum. And it was a great play by Aaron Donald getting the tip. And it was an even greater play by Ernest Jones to catch that ball, because a lot of these players, they aren't expecting a ball to just fly into their hands, and they don't really catch it that often. And we saw that later in the game too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, very much so. You know, going back to the start of the game, I think there was a little bit of momentum because, you know, the first play, you know, it's a sack by Aaron Donald. You know, I think that gave a little bit of hope. But then, you know, then you said, you know, they got that field goal. We held them to 3 points. That's awesome. You know, holding this offense, this Arizona Cardinals offense to field goals was a must. You know, we knew they were going to put points on the board, but making sure we controlled it and making sure that we weren't giving up, you know, those big touchdowns. But then you mentioned the three and out, and, you know, and I think that's been a problem, you know, almost since after the Bucs game, that we were having this slow start. And I think that just, you know, like you said, it just put this fear like, oh no, we're regressing again. But I agree with you that I think the interception, you know, again, just it gave the fans, it gave the players that momentum they need to, you know, keep firing on all cylinders throughout the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that first drive, it was either Cardinals first or second drive, Kyler Murray just misses a wide open touchdown, like just completely airmails it. So the Rams were a little lucky. And then the second quarter, the Cardinals got a lot of luck in the second quarter. Let's be honest, they were like 1 yard away from not getting that touchdown. So going through the second quarter, you have a OBJ really, really nice touchdown there from Matthew Stafford, Maggie kick. Okay. So that's a 10-play, 68-yard drive. The Rams go up 7-3, and then Matt Gay comes back and kicks a 55-yarder. We go up 10-3, and then you have a.
So yeah, then the Arizona gets the ball back, and you know this is where, like, you know, they're so good at running the ball and running that clock out. You know, this was 9 plays. I mean, it was only 4 minutes, but 9 plays, 75 yards. They get down to the one goal. They get to the goal line. And you know, the defense is just, you know, able to hold them, down till it gets to the fourth and goal on the one. They decide, the Cardinals decide to go for it. And you see Aaron Donald, and you got this, Aaron Donald's there. He's grabbing Connor and just like about to, and he just kind of like slips behind, and, you know, Connor's able to rush in kind of for, you know, what it seemed like an easy touchdown.
Yeah, really. That's a play Aaron Donald makes 90 out of 100 times, and great play by James Connor. Let's not take anything away from him, but Aaron Donald typically makes that play, but he did plenty in this game to make up for it. It happens. He's a human. But, you know, it shows a great effort. If you're a Cardinals fan at this point in the game, you're happy to be tied. The Rams would come back with a 7-play, 53-yard drive. They would end up kicking a field goal on that drive. And again, another very slow start. A few three and outs, a few like pushing the yard down the field, but it wasn't pretty at all. It was a lot of hardly earned yards, and we end up kicking a field goal anyway. A lot of field goals, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, at this point, we're getting there's not a whole lot of time left on the clock, and you know, we're going into the half at 13-10. You know, LA on top, and then I feel like most Rams fans know by now that they're going to make the announcement. Sean McVay is, you know, what is his record now? 54-0, going into half, you know, victorious. And my heart is now sinking. Like, oh no, it's only 13-10. If we go in the half, and then they're going to come out and they're going to destroy Sean McVay. It's just a perfect night to destroy Sean McVay's record. Another tidbit is their bone on bone. They were 6-1 going into this game, wearing bone on bone uniforms, and so it's like, man, they're just gonna just you know, hit us where it hurts. We're down players, and they're just gonna take away Sean McVay's winning undefeated record when leading in half. But then with final seconds of the quarter. You know, Matt Prater hits another 53-yarder. Mm-hmm. Long field goals this time. Lots of long field goals.
Yeah, very good plays by Matt Prater. Like, you got to give him credit. He's a very good kicker for Arizona. And a really nice play by Kyler Murray with a second left to get out of bounds and give him a chance for a field goal. And again, at half, if you're an Arizona fan, you're feeling very happy but very lucky. Like, these should have not been up or tied with us at half. We were clearly the better team. We had our problems, and we had a lot of hiccups on offense. But the Cardinals had a few lucky breaks to keep them tied. And we eventually saw, especially in the third, fourth quarter, we just started to run away with, and you could see this Arizona team, it just didn't have the heart in it. Like, they had a lot of miscommunication, a lot of misplays. Coming out of half, within a few plays, Van Jefferson, from a dime by Matthew Stafford, gets a 52-yard touchdown. Like, Zach, that was just a crazy play. I was, like, standing up on my couch afterwards. I was like, wow, you could not fit that in anywhere better. Not
yeah, and I think the team needed that, especially, you know, when they came out of the quarter, you know, they ran one play and then immediately had to have a timeout because there was miscommunication with OBJ, Van Jefferson. Cooper Kupp was trying to get them in position and trying to fix their position when they knew they weren't in the correct position. And all of a sudden we're like, we're 20 seconds into the game and LA calls their first timeout and you're just like, oh, I don't know. You're as a fan, you're seeing that. You're like, what is going? Like, there's still this miscommunication because OBJ is, you know, he's only been there for three full games and you know, maybe an extra practice, and so he's still learning the system. And you're just like, hopefully this isn't. And then you see the 52-yard dime to Van Jefferson, and you know, it just makes you forget about that quick timeout that they had to call at the beginning of the half.
Yeah, I would say, at least for me personally, I don't find it as annoying as that the timeouts taken when they're about to run out of time just because they don't snap the ball in time. Mm-hmm. Those are way more annoying than when you just have clear miscommunication from a new wide receiver. That's going to happen, right? Like, we're not going to have a lot of good chemistry, especially with a guy who's been on the team for 3 weeks. Like, you're going to have to direct him a little bit more than you do a normal player at this point in the season. And Stafford is still new to the team relatively himself. So a lot of moving pieces can go wrong on these plays. Arizona gets the ball back, Zach, and this is where you typically are expecting a shootout game. You're expecting Arizona to have a nice long drive and come back and score a touchdown and make it a game. Not what happens. You see within, I believe it was after they got a first down, on second in, I want to say 7, Kyler Murray drops back. He kind of wiggles somewhat out of the pocket, and he's looking towards his left, I believe trying to look for Zach Ertz. And Leonard Floyd is standing there kind of arched down, looking like apparently he was trying to make himself look smaller to Kyler. And Kyler tries to throw it over him in a perfect play by Leonard Floyd. He kind of tips it and then grabs it for the interception. A really back-breaking play for Arizona. I feel like we've had a lot of these plays happen against us in that 3-game losing skid. We have one happen for us, great play by Leonard Floyd, and we get the ball back, and we eventually capitalize on that with a Cooper Kupp touchdown, another dime. I don't know, Zach, which is your more favorite throw? Would it be that 52-yarder or this really impressive Cooper Kupp 4-yard touchdown?
I'm a Cooper Kupp guy. You know, I've been a Cooper Kupp fan since he joined the team. I've always seen him as a smart player, and you know, he had to have been the reason. If he was on the field when we were in the Super Bowl, we would have won the Super Bowl. There's no doubt in my mind that if he was on the field playing at that level, the Rams would have had that Super Bowl ring. And that play right there, you watch it, and first off, Stafford throws that perfectly into Cooper Kupp's arms. But Cooper Kupp is that player who, you know, if you can throw that tight window to, he's going to catch it. Van Jefferson can catch those deep throws. You know, I have full confidence. I think OBJ could catch that. I think Cooper Kupp could catch it. And we've seen them both, both OBJ and Cooper Kupp, catch those same catches that Van Jefferson did. But it takes an elite wide receiver to be able to catch that ball while you're falling with, you know, that back on, like, in front of you. Like, mm-hmm. that could have been a scoop and grab in front, but instead, you know, he caught it, you know, uses his mind and uses his feet to make sure that he stays in bounds.
Yeah, I didn't even register it in my mind that it was a touchdown. I thought it got intercepted or, like, batted away on the ground. It was that close of a needle, the thread. Like, it was such a perfect pass, an even better throw. Perfect pass and even better catch. And I completely agree with you. I think it's a more impressive touchdown, even though, like, 52 yarders don't come every game. But that throw doesn't come every game, and that catch definitely doesn't. It kind of reminded me of a similar situation when Cooper Kupp threw that would have been a touchdown pass if Van Jefferson got both feet in. But mm-hmm. it was like a great pass, great positioning, and you just need a wide receiver to make a play in bounds. And Van Jefferson just wasn't able to in that instance. But Matthew Stafford, like, what can we say? He's had some ducks every so often, but that was such a beautiful throw. To end out this game, James Conner, or you'll eventually have a Cardinals push late game. They end up wasting a whole lot of time kicking a field goal. We end up having a really long drive also, kicking a field goal back. And then you have another long drive where I felt like Arizona wanted to score a touchdown, but they couldn't decide whether to go fast or not at all. And you're down 10 points, right? Yeah. So this is where I believe, maybe you'll disagree with me, Zach, but I feel like we saw a limitation of the coaching in Cliff Kingsbury, and you just saw a lot of inaction and undecisiveness. Like, if you're going to kick a field goal, you better kick a field goal fast and try to get the onside kick.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do agree with you. I think Arizona, you know, when we faced them, you know, back early on in the season, they were out for blood. They were tired of being kicked around by the Rams organization for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years now. And, you know, they were ready, and, you know, they stopped our run. They were, you know, they were running the ball heavily into our team. And, you know, that's how they won that victory, I think. And this game was the complete opposite. Our front four, you know, five, they were just on top of them. And, you know, when I don't know who to blame. I don't know if it was Murray, like, saying, no, let me do this. We need this touchdown. Because at that point in time, they were chewing up so much time when they were in field goal range to still only get a field goal to leave them with 30 seconds left on the clock. Like, it doesn't make sense. If you're down in your 2-minute territory, why waste that much time to score a touchdown when you know you need 10 points? Score the easy field goal, and then give yourself that minute and a half to drive back down. Wasting so much time to then say, oh, well, you have 30 seconds now to score a field goal. It was supposed to be a touchdown. But even if they scored a touchdown, they said, all right, now we have 30 seconds to get within field goal range, which can be tough.
Yeah, that's just putting yourself in a very difficult situation with no time to do it. So hopefully, you know, Kingsbury can kind of learn from this. And I feel like for the most part, you've seen Sean McVay kind of run circles around him. You know, he caught lightning in a bottle, so to say, at week four. Also found the Rams in a kind of weird situation with a brand new QB, a running game that didn't really have a running back. and a lot of reasons the Rams lost that game, but they ran into a Rams team that was definitely hungry for this win. And our team went out and did it, even with a few backups. Like, we had a practice squad corner covering DeAndre Hopkins. Like, I mean, you don't have a lot of excuses if you're a Cardinal fan for why you lost this game. You just were the worst team.
Yep.
You even had a few missed calls on Arizona, too. Like, a face mask to Matt Stafford that would have kept our drive going. Like, a few blaring things where, like, you know, you got to take it for granted, the calls sometimes. And, you know, Arizona made it a close game at the end. And I don't even want to talk about special teams, Zach. Let's
we're going to just avoid them.
We're just going to avoid them, just like I guarantee you every player does.
I mean, I could say this is probably one of their better games, but certainly not something that we need them to step up a little bit better.
Yeah, when you're saying it's a better game and they lost the onside kick at the end of the game and there's a possibility for the other team to go tie, that's not good.
Yeah, no, I truly don't think they practice onside kicks ever. Sometimes I just assume that they think that they're going to be leading this team, like they're not going to be put in that position, and that's what it seems to me. I don't know, maybe it's just the lack of depth in the special teams, and it just seems like we just keep losing players, and so we're just throwing people on the special teams. But
like, if we're gonna have Cooper Kupp risk injury returning punts, why not just have him on the front line of the onside punt team to catch it? Like, all we need is just one person to land on the ball. I know it sounds easy. I know it's harder than that. I get that. But still, it's like we have had, I believe, 4 onside kicks happen to us this year. I believe it's 4. It's either 3 or 4, and that's a ridiculous number to happen to one team. Like, that will lose us a game in the playoffs if we're not careful against a really good team. Could have lost us this game, so hopefully they fix that up. It gives me stress even thinking about it, because anytime you shouldn't be stressed during a field goal, during a punt, during a return at all. Like, you shouldn't really be stressed. You should be like, okay, it's going to be one and done, and then, like, they may get a yard or two less. That's fine. You shouldn't be worrying, like, oh, no, they're gonna fumble this, aren't they? They're going to screw it up somehow. And it's like every play with our special teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gabby, it made me nervous at the end, because you just know that, you know, Murray does have the arm. You have Hopkins, who has the talent. You have A.J. Green, who has the talent. You have Connor, who's shown that he can do a one-handed grab. And in the months of, you know, I believe it was one defender, if not two defenders, just clutch. And you have those three receivers who, you know, well, you know, Connor's a running back, but he played better as a receiver that game. You had those three players who could catch a deep ball and score a touchdown. And we'd never want to give a team that opportunity to come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's go into quarter two of our podcast and kind of talk about this offense. Zach, I feel like our offense, clearly it's had a rough patch. No win November was a thing. It was a very sad month. A lot of struggles, a lot of reasons too. And, you know, let's be honest, Stafford, he lost us some games, at least 2 of them. I feel like he wasn't too terrible in the Titans game. I think a lot of people hate on him, so to say, for that pick 6 in the Titans game. I honestly, it was a great play by the defender. But overall, like, that 3 game stretch, he had bad games. He wasn't doing good. But now we're starting to see a more confident Stafford. Like, you saw all the hype leading up to the game. People saying Stafford can't win a single big game in his entire life. There's no way. The Rams can't beat a team with 10 or more wins. They can't win against a team with a positive record. You heard all this talk. And guess what? He wins in prime time against a highly touted opponent. Yeah. He can do it. Like, it's such a silly argument. When you have people like Blake Bortles winning playoff games, why is it such a thing that, like, Stafford couldn't win three playoff games with Detroit? It's Detroit.
Right. No, I, in some ways, I was hesitant on Stafford, and not because, you know, he played for Detroit, because I think he's a great quarterback. I think he's he has the arm, he has the intuition, he has that veteran experience that I think the Rams really needed. But you're coming into this new offense, this hot, in all past, it's always been a hot offense. It's a fast offense. It has all these moving parts. You have these dynamic plays where, you have your receivers being defenders and, helping the run game and things like that. You have all of these things, and it's a new concept. You get in, you lose Cam Akers prior to season starting, which throws the game plan off. You just lost Robert Woods, almost 3.5 weeks ago now, 4 weeks ago. And you're onboarding, another star stud of OBJ and trying to get him into the system. And you just have all these pieces in, the first three games, I think Stafford played really well. He played to what everybody wanted him or he needed to play at to be successful. Then he started going on this, maybe first half lull where, it was really hard to start getting these drives going. But he's really improved, especially since the slump. I was fortunate enough to be at two of the Rams games this year, the Colts game, which he played fantastic. And I actually went to the Titans game, and that's probably the one thing I would disagree with is, to me, it felt like Stafford gave up a total of 14 points. And if you take away those 14 points, it would have been at least at that time, take away 14 points, it would have been a lot closer game, even if the Rams would have lost. So I think that's the one game that I kind of, other than the two, I think we should have won the 49ers game wholeheartedly. The Green Bay game, it's Green Bay. They're a tough team playing at Lambeau. I can't remember how cold it was, but you're still playing in an environment, even though Stafford should be used to that environment, it's still a different environment for the rest of the team. And, this is a team sport. You can't always blame one player or one person for the mm-hmm. loss. But you can put a little bit more of a weight, especially on the quarterback position. If he's, throwing pick sixes and, going that route.
Yeah, and that pick six on the 49ers game was definitely not his fault. That's on Tyler Higbee.
Definitely, for sure.
Yeah. I found it funny when people are like, he threw three pick sixes in a row. I'm like, overall, I can't wait to go to my second game of the season. I went to the Bears, the first game, and I'm going to the Ravens in 2 weeks.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, so it should be fun. That'll be nice. Maybe looking at playoff tickets, depending on where the Rams go. And, hopefully they're playing in SoFi all three games. Hopefully, but it doesn't look like it so far.
They have a long hill to travel, but, and we could break that down towards the end if we want to. Mm-hmm. But, the one thing that the other thing is going back to OBJ, with his offense, and, this is his, is this his fourth week, third or fourth week?
Third week with a touchdown.
Yeah. So this was his third week with a touchdown. And that just has to say something. He hasn't done that since, I think it was 2017, that he's had 3 weeks in a row with a touchdown. I know there's been a whole bunch of controversy. Like, is he a toxic player? But they said that about lots of players. I mean, everyone thought Ramsey was a toxic player coming into the Rams. Marcus Peters was a, mm-hmm. Coming to LA, this LA has to be a special group. We don't get to see all the behind the scenes things, but you take these players get to show their true self and get to show how extraordinary they can be. Everyone keeps thinking like OBJ, he's only thinking about himself. He only cares about how many receptions he gets and things like that. And, I think a player does think about that. Like, he thinks he could bring more to the table, and that offense has to has to come up with, you know, how can we make that happen? And, you know, especially in Cleveland, you know, I think he was unhappy with the organization and you know, how the plays that were being developed, because I think he thought that Cleveland could be so much better, and they weren't. And I think that he's finding more and more success with the Rams and finding that's a bigger community. It's the Ramily, it's the we not me mentality. And I think every player going into the Rams, you have to have that conversation of, this is a team full of stars, but you are not the star.
Mm-hmm. And I think it helps having a player like Aaron Donald in your locker room. Like, you're not going to be like, I'm the top dog when you look and see Aaron Donald. And it just helps we have a player like Aaron Donald who's that good, but that humble. Like, I feel like a lot of people don't see how humble Aaron Donald is outside of, like, Rams and Ram fans. Like, you honestly don't, because he's the nicest, most humble, best player to probably have lived, especially on the defensive side. And so when you're that good and that humble, it helps the culture so much around the building. And it is definitely something special, to the point where a lot of these players coming into our organization that had been deemed toxic and had been said to be people who would cause and break up the locker room and we're going to have drama, it hasn't happened.
Yeah,
it is a special culture. And, you know, I am very proud of the team for doing that and being that way and having this winning culture. It's been a very long time since the Rams have had this winning type of culture for an extended period of time. And, you know, it's first time since the 70s, Zach, the Rams have had 5 winning seasons. Mm-hmm. Hallelujah. It's a miracle.
Yep. Yep. You know, you toss in 3 Super Bowl runnings during that time period, but still, it's a great feeling to be on a winning season year after year after year. You know, I don't have to, you know, hide my Rams gear when you know, I go out. I can wear those out daily, proudly daily. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, super excited for Cooper Kupp. You know, if we keep saying this offense, and you know, it can't be out without saying without Cooper Kupp. You know, he's having an amazing season. You know, number one receiver in the league right now, looking at claiming that triple crown towards the end of the year. You know, we still got 4 games left in the regular season, but you know, he's on that trajectory, and it doesn't look like he's going to get slowed down.
Yeah, Cooper Kupp. What can we say? Like, we've known he's been special, but who saw him being like the best wide receiver in all of football? Like, I knew he was always great. Like, I said he was the best route runner in the entire league even before this year. Mm-hmm. But he's only proved it. Like, his skills, and he's just smart. And that's the thing. People don't realize he's not the fastest guy. He's not even the quickest guy, but he has enough speed, he has enough quickness, and he is smart enough. He can burn you if he can read your coverage. And he's like a quarterback. He will read your coverage, and he knows how to open up in different zones when different people fall back, when people miss assignments. He can see all of that. And it's like poetry to watch him run routes. It really is. And it's a special thing watching him in person. And man, Zach, if we get 3 or 4 more years of this, he's going to be a special player for a long time.
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, he's always been Mr. Reliable. He's Mr., you know, third down, he'll catch the ball, get you that first down nugget. You know, he's always that player who will get you yards after the play. But, you know, in going to your greens, I don't think anyone realized this. I mean, trust me, doing fantasy draft, going back to the beginning of the year, you know, I honestly was picking Robert Woods over Cooper Kupp before the year started, because Robert Woods has always been that wide receiver one category. Someone picked him up at first. I was like, well, if he's up, I'm taking Cooper Kupp no matter what. And, you know, he's been great for my fantasy league, tell you what. But but he's just that special dude who, you know, just knowing that he goes in and he has breakfast with Stafford every Friday. If quarterbacks and wide receivers haven't heard that, and they still are not implementing this kind of connection between their quarterback and their wide receivers, then maybe that's the problem. Maybe, you know, again, it's the we, not me. And Cooper Kupp's looking, tried to benefit the team, not just himself, and benefit his running or his quarterback, designing plays, helping out, you know, create these unique things that can get them into better positions and throw off that defense. Especially since they have to be double team. They have to be trying to double team the guy, and they have to figure out how can I not be double teamed?
Yeah. And if you look at different running plays, who's the first guy making the lead block in the running play, going full force, not caring about injury? Cooper Kupp, mm-hmm. making the hard nose tackles or pushbacks, blocks. Awesome. What can we say? He's just a special player. He's one of the most well-rounded wide receivers, and he's showing it. Let's kind of go into the news as we enter our halftime. So, Zach, we have a lot of COVID news on this Rams team. Man, we lost Henderson, and then we lost Ramsey and Higbee on Monday, right before the game. And we just learned Tuesday about OBJ, Burgess, Hopkins, Hughes, Jackson, Joseph Day, and Jonah Williams. So a few hurt players also getting added to the COVID list, so we won't be getting them back either way. But still, it is a sucky thing to go through. I have had COVID before. It is not fun. And I wish these guys all well. Hopefully a few of them have some false positives. I know Higbee got put back on the team and off of the COVID list. I believe that happened Tuesday.
Yeah, that was the most frustrating part about that situation was he got tested positive and then had two negative tests, but he still was ineligible to play because he had to have an overnight PCR test. Even though they were confident, I mean, I think he was confident and everyone else was confident that they're not, or that he wasn't positive, but still losing him, I think it was a big blow, because, you know, he does well on the receiving core, he does well on the, you know, pass protection. So, you know, losing him was pretty upsetting. But this list keeps growing. Now we're up to 25 players. Many of them are starters, and you know, and it still could get worse. It's only Thursday. We still have Friday and Saturday before we even get to Sunday. And then you have Sunday, which, you know, could initiate more. So this team seems like it's getting hit with COVID. I'm not really sure what this means for Sunday. You know, the NFL does have protocols in place that if it's a vaccinated player status, that's becoming a problem. Like, all these vaccinated players are now getting tested positive for COVID. I think that they will have protocols in place where they may be able to move it to a Tuesday or Wednesday game. But, you know, as great as that sounds to get all the players back, well, then you're looking at a very, very short week, you know, for the following game. So I do know new COVID protocols came out. I didn't have time today to go back and review them, but that's pretty much what the essence of some of this was. I think they've enhanced kind of the tier one and tier two, where, you know, you have to do things in outside or in a well-ventilated area, all their team meetings and things like that, especially for depending on what level of COVID your facility is hitting, which, you know, I think right now, the Rams are definitely in a high tier mode.
Yeah, definitely not good with the amount of people. I know they were talking about reducing the amount of negative tests from, I believe, like, it's three now to two, and have implementing daily testing, because mm-hmm. I know they slowed down on that from last year. So hopefully they do that. I know the NFL is still talking about a few things. I know they announced they weren't pushing back the Thursday night game just because the Browns lost a ton of players too. The Browns and Rams are probably the most hit right now, mm-hmm. if you're talking about like density. And they announced they're not going to push back the Browns game. I don't anticipate the Rams game being pushed back. If there's this situation next week, then yeah, I definitely think that's a possibility where they push it back to a Tuesday or Wednesday and try to see if a team can get some of its players back.
So if we don't have Ramsey, OBJ, I'm looking at this list again, Terrell Burgess, Bryson Hopkins, Bobby Evans, Von Miller, Troy Reader,
Oboe, and then Kareem Orr. So, man, we're scraping the waiver wire, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I know they've been trying to add people from the practice squad, but those are big shoes to fill. I mean, you know, I think one of the successful things was having, especially on the defensive side, yeah, you lose Ramsey. You had Darius Williams back. He might have been back last week too, but you know, having Darius Williams still back there was good. But having Von Miller, you know, you having Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd and Greg Gaines, what a monster he was that game. I mean, that guy was. We'll talk about the defense later in a few minutes, but man,
I still, you know, think we can win with these guys out though. Like, this isn't, we're lucky enough, it's not like our entire wide receiver room and you have, like, you have Stafford throwing to Wolford. You know,
or Wolford with Stafford out and Wolford playing. Like, that scares me. Like,
yeah, that scares me. Let's not talk about that. Let's not not put that evil on us, Ricky Bobby. Yeah. Okay. American Underdog coming out in a few weeks. I think, Zach, that movie looks like a solid, good drama, I guess sports drama almost. You know, of course, telling the story of the greatest show on turf and probably the greatest undrafted player to play QB. It looks good. I'm excited. I know I'll be seeing it Christmas Day.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I'll be able to see it Christmas Day, but I will see it in the within that first week that it opens. Yeah, it's a great story. I mean, it really is what drove me to be a Rams fan. You know, coming from Cincinnati, I should be a Bengals fan, and you know, living in Colts country, you know, maybe I should have adopted them as my team. But you know, the Rams have been the team for a long time now, and it pretty much started with the greatest show on turf, and Kurt Warner and his history. And I'm super excited about it. I'm super excited about the cast that they got for this. I feel like a lot of times these movies, they cast, you know, maybe the B or C list actors, but you know, I think Zachary Levi is becoming an A, if he isn't already, if most people minds, I think he's an A list actor. And I think even Kurt Warner's even in the movie. So, you know, I think it's going to be a fantastic movie, and I'm super proud that the Rams get another vehicle to kind of drive home that, you know, this is a team, and this is a, you know, this team has history. It has, you know, it has a dynasty, and I think we're going to continue on that upward trajectory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And hopefully it's a good movie. We haven't had a good sports movie in a few years now, so we'll see how that goes. Moving on to quarter three, let's talk about this defense. You have probably the greatest defensive player to ever live, or he's at least in top five. Aaron Donald winning defensive player of the week, having a 3-sack performance. I believe he now has the most 3-sack performances out of any defensive lineman. Very impressive stuff. I mean, what can we say? He's like Cooper Kupp. You can't really say anything because he's that great. He is watching literally someone's career highlight reel every week.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. And again, it's even if you can't say anything about him, there's a reason. Like, you will see games where you're like, you don't hear anything about Aaron Donald. And that's because he's getting double and triple teamed. This guy is such a threat that teams have to double and triple team him just so that he doesn't make those explosive plays. And he still got three explosive plays out on this Arizona defense or offense, you know, coming in, starting it off with a sack and then ending it with a sack. I think it was a perfect night for him. You know, he should be getting defensive player of the week every week just because he is double and triple teamed. I don't know the statistics, but I would love to see the statistics on, you know, how many other defensive players are consistently getting double and triple teamed every week. I mean, if that's not a category in why you should become defensive player of the year, you know, I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know why it's not. It should be. He brings so much presence and stability to that team and to that defense. It's one of the reasons why it's been so successful over the last several years, even with the change in defense coordinators.
Zach, you want to guess how many teams Aaron Donald alone had more pressures than in this week?
Which game did he have more pressures in?
No. How many more teams did he alone have more pressures than their defense as a whole?
I think I saw the statistics, but I'm going to guess 14.
14 is it. He had more pressures than 14 individual teams by himself.
Combined. Right?
Yeah. Their entire defenses.
That man's a monster. Like, that stat is ridiculous. There was other stats throughout that game that were also ridiculous, more on the Arizona Cardinals on the bad side of things. But yeah, that's a statistic that's just unbeatable.
Yeah, that boggles your mind. Morris, since this is our first podcast, I'll say I'm not necessarily a Morris hater at all. I think he's been fine. It's hard to kind of go or replicate that Brandon Staley recipe from last year. That was a special crew cast of players. And Staley was a top-notch defensive coordinator. Now, I am a little salty. We couldn't keep him for a second year because everyone poaches our coaches. Mm-hmm. But yet, you know, the Buccaneers can keep all their coaches, and Kansas City's offensive coordinator can't get a job. But, you know, if you hold coffee for Sean McVay, you'll get a job instantly because you apparently are a brilliant football mind. But besides all that, Morse has done a solid job, and I think his stats point that out. Overall, we're pretty average in both categories of defensive yards per game and then like points scored. We're around middle of the pack. But I really feel this defense clamps down in critical moments. We haven't had, like, for the most part, I feel like one game they've completely melted down. But besides that, like, I haven't really seen a game where they're totally at fault for losing us the game.
No, I don't. And I, you know, there are several games, you know, I don't blame them. I don't blame them for Tennessee. I don't really blame them. You know, a lot of the ones where we did get pick sixes, I think that puts a strain on them. You know, when you get put into a situation where your offense can't be on the field for more than three snaps, that puts your defense into a bad position. So, you know, there has to be that balance, and, you know, they strive well and they have good players, but I think there have been times where they haven't made the right adjustments. The plays that stick out to me the most are when it is 3rd and 10, 3rd and 13, 3rd and 18. Oh. And they're just letting these points, they're just letting the quarterbacks run the game and letting them get first downs. And that's happened a number of times. And I feel like those are the instances where fans really pick out, and they're really getting frustrated, where you're like, you had them more than 10 yards and you could not stop them. And then they drive down and score. And those are the moments that I think people get so frustrated with our defense.
I'll just interject and say, like, Zach, the most annoying is when it's like 3rd and 15 and then you see our corners 20 yards down the field. Like, mm-hmm. Why are we, like, they're like playing complete prevent defense when it's 3rd down. Like, I understand mixing it up, and like every now and then that's perfectly fine, having some like deep, just deep coverage to kind of confuse the quarterback. But doing that a lot of the time, like, I feel like Morris is very conservative against deep plays, and it hasn't really helped out a lot. Like, we still have a decent amount of explosive plays go against us, especially like in Green Bay. Yeah. And that's just something I hope they look into. This is definitely one of their better games against Arizona they've had all season. Just a really total package of a game from defensive side. But, you know, what can we say? Greg Gaines, I mean, the dude has a motor.
That dude has a motor. Like, he was running as fast as Tyler Murray, and I think he weighs twice as much. not saying that, that's not a bad thing towards Gaines. I mean, he was flying out of there. I saw him, you know, he tackled Murray and then like popped up like and just was like he just like was lifted in thin air. Like, that guy was moving, and he has, and at least the last 2 weeks has shown he's something special and something that, you know, the Rams are going to continue to utilize as a deep threat.
When we get Sebastian Joseph Day back, ooh, that defensive line, man, that's a good defensive line. It really is.
It is. No, I agree. And I think adding Von Miller, I think, has increased this defense, changing the defense up a little bit. I think that was the other thing with Morris, was that he wasn't really changing up the defense. You know, and I love Taylor Rapp, and I think he's a good player, but he's still young. And, you know, him being the lead safety role still kind of, I don't think he's quite ready for that. And so I think they've been doing a lot of two safeties and, you know, making sure he's, you know, he's not playing that safety kind of cornerback role. He's kind of staying on top of somebody or having somebody else with him. I think that's been a big plus as well. So changing up that defense.
We really need to treat, Rapp like the Seahawks treat Jamal Adams, like treat him like a blitzing safety or like a kind of pseudo linebacker. That's what we need to treat him as. He's just not great in coverage. I think he's proven that. He has his moments, but typically he's a mismatch for wide receivers or even some tight ends. Like, he just isn't the greatest. And I feel like hopefully Terrell Burgess starts getting back into the rotation a little bit more and getting some playing time at that strong safety position over Rapp. I just don't see Rapp being.
And I think they made that answer. I think they made that adjustment this game mostly because Ramsey was out. I think Rapp would probably still have been playing a lot more snaps if Ramsey was still in the on the field. But I agree with you. I think they need to make that change. And like I said, this is not a dig on Rapp. It's a, you know, he's good. He has great moments and things like that, but they need to rotate people in and, you know, make sure that defense is staying fresh and staying up and be able to make those big plays when need be.
Well, not every player is going to be the number one safety in the league. You're going to have people who are good at certain things and not so great at other things, and you have to be able to utilize those role players, as Sean McVay calls them. Like, you have to be able to know their role, what they're good at, and then use them for that and try to use your other players that are better in other moments. It's one of those things that I hope they start switching towards and getting better at. And Ernest Jones, and I'll tell you this, Zach, I watched 4 years of South Carolina football. I knew this guy was special. I was thrilled. I was jumping up and down in the draft when we drafted him. I know a lot of Rams fans did not know him and were angry that we drafted him instead of other big name linebackers. I'm telling you, Ernest Jones was one of the top linebackers. You guys are starting to see it now. He is such a smart player, and he's one of the only reasons South Carolina ever had a defense during his time in the school. He's the most intelligent player I've seen in college football at that school. He's up there with, like, Gilmore. Just, he knows how to read coverage. He knows how to read formations, and he is faster than he looks. And he graded badly, but I feel like a lot of people focus on that and don't realize you don't need a middle linebacker that's super athletic when he knows where to be. Like, that great positioning is probably the most important thing at the linebacker spot, even more than being like super athletic, because you have a lot of super athletic linebackers in the league, but it doesn't matter because they just get thrown over, right? Like, if you're like 2, 3, 4 yards ahead of the wide receiver and the quarterback just throws it over the head, like, it doesn't matter. Yeah, you're super athletic, but you're in the wrong spot. So you have to have both parts of the game, and I think he's a perfect mix, especially coming from third round.
Yeah, no, I did not know about Ernest Jones going into the draft, and you know, see him perform at this high level, I think is super exciting and going down the last stretch of this and then going into the playoffs, you know, I'm very happy to see these players get their time to shine and actually show us what they're made of and improving our defense and making us feel comfortable that, you know, if someone does need to, you know, take a break and whatever, that these players are able to fill those roles. So I'm really glad at our depth at these positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said on draft night that he would be the best linebacker we've had since Corey Littleton. Yeah, I think I'm already proven right on that. just seeing him play this lead role, and you know, nothing against our other linebackers like Troy Reader. Troy Reader has a few good moments every game, but man, does he get cooked sometimes. He gets cooked.
That, and that's a difference from, I feel like last year, as Rams fans, he was making these big giant plays, and I don't know if it's a regression. I don't know if it's just a different setup or what, but like, I feel like last year he was performing well, and we were all liking what we were seeing from Troy Reader. And this year it's kind of taken a little bit of a step backwards in that performance. And maybe it's because he's playing more and we're able to see him more. Maybe that's the case too, but I definitely do see where you're coming from there.
Yeah. Let's go into quarter four and let's preview the Seahawks game. Zach, looking at this game, what scares you the most about the Seahawks going into it besides the COVID news? Let's assume a lot of our COVID players do come back. We might be missing, let's say, two or three starters.
Yeah, it's the Seahawks. You go around and you look at the divisions, and this has to be the toughest division of all NFL. The NFC West is just each game, any of these teams face each other. It's a cutthroat game. Like, they are playing at their hardest. The Seahawks this year, you know, they are the bottom of the poll this year, but really, they're still a tough team. They have Wilson, the miracle maker. He makes anything happen. I don't know how it happens, but he can do anything. So it's just another one of those, like, we should have the upper hand. We have the personnel. We showed it off, you know, in our first matchup with them. But you know, it's still going to be a hard fought game. Luckily it's at home. So I think that hopefully will make things a little bit easier for our guys. But yeah, it's just Russell Wilson. You know, I'm not even super scared of Pete Carroll anymore. But just Russell Wilson, I think he is not that kind of an athlete, who likes to see his team lose. And he really could put his whole team on his shoulders and kind of be like, he's the motivation for that team to succeed.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree. Russell Wilson is definitely going to be a critical piece if the Seahawks can pull off this upset. Going into it, the Seahawks defense, it leads the league in most given up yards, but is fifth on scoring points. So that's, a lot of yards, but that's a very impressive feat by the Seattle defense, which last year was Jekyll and Hyde, like an awful first half of the season and then like amazing second half. They were a very wearied team last year. And then coming into this year, this defense was starting to look exactly the same, but it's somewhat turned it around, especially in the red zone. Recently, and we can't underlook this defense. They're good. Are they the best defense in the league? Definitely not. But you can throw on them, but you have to score points. You have to get touchdowns, and they do not give up those easily. And their offense is basically bottom half of the league on both. So our defense definitely matches up well with our offense, I believe, especially if we can get pressure like we did in our first game. It's going to be an entertaining game. I definitely don't disagree with you. Anything can happen in these NFC West games. They're typically wild. And, you know, Seahawks and Rams games in the last 4 years have been wild, especially since we got Sean McVay. I mean, we've, for the most part, I would say, have had Seattle's number. We've had more wins. Not to mention, I feel like the two wins they have gotten, like one of them, they only won off of a last-second field goal miss by Greg Zuerlein, which we would have made the playoffs had he made that kick. But you hear the sadness. Mm-hmm. But it should be a great game. It really should. And hopefully it has a possibility, if we're fully healthy, to be a blowout. Maybe if the Seahawks make a lot of mistakes on the first half. But I don't see that happening. I think it'll be close. I'll predict 34-23.
Wow.
Rams. Yep.
That's a good. It's a little bit higher than I think I would. I would put it almost at 27-17 Rams. I think it's still going to be lower. I still have to kind of keep the COVID in the back of my mind, just knowing what players could be in and could be out. If I had a guess, I would probably lean towards 27-17. Russell Wilson's still making some great stuff happening, but I think the Rams still pull it off. When I looked at the schedule at the beginning of the year, I was worried about these last five games. Five games. I thought it was going to be a tough road ahead. It's looking better. It's looking brighter than I think it did during the 3 week slump. As long as we can, you know, stay healthy and continue on this motivation and this high level of playing that, our rookies and, you know, second years are having to really step up their game, and those from the practice squad, they're really stepping up and having to fill really big shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next we play the Vikings, very Jekyll and Hyde, then potentially playing the Ravens without Lamar, and then going into 49ers, which I think is the hardest game for the rest of the season, I'm going to be honest. And we'll see how that goes. If we run the table, Zach, we could be getting hot at the right time. I think we have to get through this Seahawks team. You can't have a off day against this type of a team. You will lose if they don't come out hot. And I feel like this team hasn't proven to be consistent in the last 3 years. The last time they were consistently coming out hot, we went to the Super Bowl. But ever since, we've always had spurts of being good and then just not being able to adjust. I think some of that's on Sean McVay. Some of it has been on the personnel. But I think we have the right personnel this year. The question is, can we put it all together at the right time? And we will see.
Yeah, going into the last four games, I expect us to win three of the four. That's my kind of gut telling me that I think we can do three or four. I'm not 100% sure which one is the game we're going to lose. But I think the winning three of the next four would be very helpful in our achievement to be number one in the division. Obviously we still have to try to surpass Arizona, which they have, I had their schedule memorized and now I forgot it. They have Detroit next week, which,
yeah.
You know, it is what it is.
They have Detroit, Dallas. I know Dallas is
Indy. I think it's Detroit, Indianapolis, Dallas, and somebody and Washington. Else. And I feel good that maybe they could lose two of the four games.
Yeah.
Seahawks.
I think if we lose one, it'll probably be the Vikings. I really think the Vikings would be the one.
It is in Minnesota. It is just a different. Theirs is an indoor stadium, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's indoor, so okay. It's not like cold, but yeah, it's still. They're a weird team. They really are. They're probably the weirdest team in the league, because I feel like they could blow out like a Cardinals team, but also like lose to the Bears. They're that type of team.
Yeah. Well, if the Colts and or the Cowboys can help beat the Cardinals, that would be fantastic.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Those are the only two teams that I feel like could, out of the four teams, I feel like we need the Colts and the Cowboys to step up their game. And
I don't know if I can ever root for the Cowboys in the game, though. Just because so cocky. I mean, oh, so cocky.
But it's against the Cardinals, and we want to win the division.
I don't know. I mean, with how the Cardinals have been playing at home, maybe we want them to win the division. We'll see how it goes. Thank you guys for joining us. Please like and subscribe and post your comments down how you think we're going to do going down the stretch, how you think we're going to do in the Seattle game, and join us next week as we break down the Seattle game and we look forward to the Vikings and kind of talk about their Jekyll and Hyde-ness. Thank you guys for joining and have a great day.